Chapter 3. At about this very time, King Agrippa had indeed gone to Alexandria in order to celebrate with Alexandros, who had been sent to manage Egypt, which had also been entrusted to him by Nero. But terrible suffering overcame his sister, Berenike, who was present in Jerusalem and was observing the criminality of the soldiers. And often she would send both her own horse chiefs and bodyguards to Florus, and would plead with him to put an end to the murder. And indeed, he wanted to hear nothing about either the multitude of those being done away with, or the nobility of the woman who made the appeal. Instead, he was distracted solely by the profits from this plundering. But the soldiers' assault was rabid, even against the queen. Accordingly, they were not only torturing and utterly destroying the captives before her eyes. Instead, they would also have done away with her had she not managed to take refuge in the royal palace. And having become anxious about the soldiers' attack, she passed the night there with her guards. Now, she was staying in Jerusalem in order to fulfill a vow to God. For it is customary for those who are suffering from a sickness or by some other stresses, to make a vow, and for 30 days before they were going to offer sacrifices, to both abstain from wine and to shave the hair on their head. And it was while she was fulfilling these very things that Berenike, both barefoot and in front of Florus's tribunal platform, kept begging him. And in addition to not being met with respect, she put her very existence in danger. Therefore, these things indeed happened on the 16th day of the month of Artemisios. Now indeed, on the next day, the multitude, being extremely upset, streamed together into the upper market, and with enormous shouts concerning those who had been destroyed, they broke into wailing. But the preponderance of their cries was also hostile against Florus. Alarmed at this outburst, the powerful men, along with the chief priests, rent their clothes, and each one fell down at their feet, pleading with them to stop, and, considering what they had already suffered, not to provoke Florus into some incurable action. Now the multitude promptly complied, both out of respect for those who made the appeal, and in the hope that Florus would no longer act illegally against them. But Florus was troubled that the disturbance had been quelled, and endeavoring to reignite it, he summoned the chief priests along with the notables. And he declared that the populace had but one sure way of proving that they were not going to continue to foment revolution. If they would go out and meet the soldiers coming up from Caesarea, for two cohorts were approaching. But while they were calling the multitude together, he sent ahead and instructed the cohort centurions to transmit a message to those under them that they were not to greet the Judeans in return, and that if the Judeans so much as uttered a word against him, they were to make use of their weapons. Now the chief priests, after gathering the multitude into the temple, began appealing that they go out to meet the Romans and to welcome the cohorts before incurable suffering would come upon them. The seditious men would not comply with them, and the multitude, on account of those who had been destroyed, was inclining toward the bolder ones. Then indeed, every priest and every servant of God brought out the holy vessels and donned the ornamentation in which it was their custom to perform the services. Both the cithara players, as well as the singers with their instruments, fell prostrate and began supplicating them to protect the consecrated ornamentation for them and not to provoke the Romans into plundering the divine treasures. But the chief priests themselves were able to be seen, indeed, heaping dust on their heads, but bare-chested, their clothes having been rent. Now they were begging each of the notables by name, and the multitude in common, that they would not, by the slightest error of judgment, hand over their fatherland to those who were yearning to destroy it.
For what benefit will the soldiers gain by receiving a greeting from us Judeans? Or what amendment can we obtain for what has happened if we refuse to go out now? But if they certainly welcome those who go out to approach them, as is the custom, the occasion for the war will indeed be cut away from Florus. But we will gain our fatherland and suffer nothing more. And besides, if we comply with a few seditious persons, it will show a terrible lack of control. Especially when we, being a populace of such strength, should rather be compelling them to share in our own good sense as well.
By these persuasions, they succeeded in soothing the multitude. And at the same time, they indeed repulsed some of the insurgents with threats, but others with shame. Then, leading them out with silence, but also with ornamentation, they went to meet the soldiers. And when they had come up to them, they offered greetings. But when the soldiers made no answer at all, the insurgents began shouting against Florus. This was the agreed signal which had been given for striking against them. Accordingly, the soldiers immediately surrounded them and began beating them with clubs. And the cavalry chased after anyone who fled, trampling them. Now many indeed fell beneath the blows of the Romans. But more, by suffering violence from their own companions. Now, there was a terrible crushing around the gates, and while each one was eager to pass in first, the rush became slower for everyone. But the destruction of those who had been thrown down was terrible, for they were suffocated and broken by a multitude of those who were stepping on top of them and disappeared. Even their own relatives could not recognize them enough to give them burial. But then, the soldiers fell upon those whom they caught up with, beating them without restraint. And they kept pushing the multitude back through what is called Beth Ezan, trying to force their way through and take control of the temple as well as Antonia. Since Florus was also intent on taking possession of these places, he led the soldiers which were with him out of the royal palace and was struggling to reach the fortress. Yet truly, he failed in his offensive. For the populace, having been turned back upon him, blocked his charge. And standing at intervals on the roofs, they kept throwing stones at the Romans. But the Romans were worn out after a long struggle with the projectiles from above, and grew too weak to cut through the multitude which had blocked up the alleyways. So they began to withdraw into their encampment at the royal palace. But the insurgents were worried that Florus might attack again and take control of the temple through Antonia. So they immediately climbed upon the temple porticos which connected to Antonia and cut through them. This cooled Florus's greed. For since he was intent on the treasuries of God, and for that reason was longing to enter Antonia, as soon as the porticos were torn down, his charge was hindered. So he summoned both the chief priests and the council. Indeed, he told them that he himself was departing from the city, but that he would leave behind for them as much of a garrison as they thought suitable. Now they promised that they would do everything to maintain security and not to foment future revolution, provided he would leave them with one cohort. However, not the one which had fought against them, for the multitude harbored animosity toward that one on account of what they had suffered from it. So he exchanged the cohort as they thought suitable, and with the remainder of the force, he returned to Caesarea.